Sirs, moms, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Redcoat History Podcast with me, Christian Parkinson. We've got a fascinating, if somewhat slightly niche, subject for you today. We're looking at a man called Captain Cecil Darcy, who was awarded the Victoria Cross for his actions during the Anglo-Zulu War. There's a bit of a mystery element to today's episode, so stay tuned to find out what we think really happened to the man. Before we get stuck in, I just want to mention my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/redcoathistory. When you sign up there, you can sign up as a free member or for $5 a month, and that gives you early access to most of my videos, probably about 2 weeks before they come out on YouTube. It's also a great way to keep in touch with me if you're so inclined. On top of that, for those who wish to look a bit snazzy for the ladies, you can also buy some Redcoat History themed t-shirts and sweaters over at redcoathistory.myspreadshop.co.uk. That's redcoathistory.myspreadshop.co.uk. Plenty of great stuff there, including the Redcoat History logo, an Iron Duke t-shirt, and one image which shows the first Eagle of the Peninsular War being captured by Sergeant Masterson at the Battle of Barossa. Lots of fun stuff. Anyway, guys, let me stop gasbagging and let's get on with today's story. Many VC winners have struggled to cope with their sudden fame, and today's hero is one of them. He rose through the ranks to command one of the most famous units of the South African frontier. He won a Victoria Cross fighting the Zulus, served with distinction against the Basutu, and then mysteriously disappeared. He's an incredible man, but one who remains an enigma. Cecil Darcy was actually a Kiwi, born at Whanganui, New Zealand in August 1850. But his family settled in what is now the Eastern Cape in modern-day South Africa. At 20, Cecil followed his brothers into the civil service, a highly sought-after and prestigious occupation in the colony at the time. And for the next 6 years, he worked in government offices, but he yearned for the life of a soldier. You can't blame him for that. He finally got his chance when the 9th Cape Frontier War against the Xhosa broke out in 1877. The Albany Mounted Force was mobilised in October of that year under Captain Thomas Minto, and Cecil was appointed as a sergeant in the unit. They operated in the Transkei region against the Amaxhosa, tough fighters who were very skilled in a guerrilla style of warfare. But Cecil was hungry for more, and in December 1877, a legendary unit was formed by Lieutenant Freddie Carrington of the 1st 24 Foot. The Imperial-funded Frontier Light Horse was to become a legendary unit, and Darcy managed to get himself a commission as a lieutenant. The FLH, as it was known, saw action in the Transkei region, and then took a large part in the Battle of Kentani, I'm not sure how you say it. It was a decisive battle fought on the 7th of February 1878. This was the Frontier Light Horse's first action, and they performed very well. By the end of the Cape Frontier War, Cecil was a captain and in command of No. 2 Troop. The regiment's commander, Major Redvers Buller, clearly rated Darcy's ability as a soldier and as a commander. Darcy was also a well-known figure in the community, and Buller took full advantage of that to help him recruit more men into the unit. But as followers of this show will know, this period of Southern African history is just one war after another. Next up was the inconclusive war with the Bapedi tribe under Sekukune. Cecil commanded his troop well, though the war was fairly inglorious. Shortly afterwards, in November 1878, Buller's regiment joined up with Colonel Evelyn Wood's No. 4 Column in anticipation for the coming Zulu War. This would be the big test they were waiting for. A tough and determined enemy who weren't scared of a stand-up scrap. Wood had served alongside the FLH in the Frontier War and liked and trusted them, and he knew Cecil himself personally. About this time, Buller took command of all the mounted troops in No. 4 Column, and Captain Barton of the Coldstream Guards was given command of the Frontier Light Horse. The unit was constantly busy, searching for the enemy, on reconnaissance patrols, doing the sort of work that cavalry have always done, but that is often overlooked in the big histories. Cecil himself was at the centre of things, nearly always in the saddle and constantly in action. But it was at Hlabane Mountain on the 28th of March 1879 that things came to a head for the unit. Wood ordered his mounted troops to assault this enemy stronghold, but it was a disastrous day. It began well enough for the Frontier Light Horse, but things soon deteriorated quickly. My good friend Cam Simpson, who helped to write this episode and did most of the research, has done an entire book on the Frontier Light Horse during this period. I'll put a link for that below. The crafty enemy of Zulus and Abakalusi warriors blocked their line of retreat and began to attack them from all sides. They were trapped and had only one route to escape, and this was down a treacherous pass of rocks. Hundreds of mounted men and levies on foot were forced to descend down this rocky slope that, for obvious reasons, became known as Devil's Pass. Cecil struggled to keep his men together as the Abakalusi clansmen were all around them, dragging men from their horses and assegaying them. It was a desperate and violent scene, with at least one man killing himself rather than being assegaied. Here's a first-hand account from Trooper Mossop of the FLH. Many glancing sights I had seen that day of the Zulus with some of our men who had fallen into their hands dead or alive. It's not good to write about such sights. All I can say is that it was a horror. Perhaps the man who was now at my side had seen that which induced him to act in the way he did. I knew him well but won't mention his name. "Do you think there's any chance of pushing through?" I asked him. I was obliged to shout to make myself heard. The din was terrific. "Not a hope," he replied, and placing the muzzle of his carbine in his mouth, he pulled the trigger. A lot of his brains or other soft stuff splashed onto my neck. It was the last straw. I gave one yell, let go the bridle of my pony, and bounded down into the pass. Cecil struggled to keep his men together as the Abakalusi clansmen were all around them, dragging men from their horses and assegaying them. It was a desperate and violent scene. While descending down the pass, a large rock, allegedly the size of a small piano, struck Darcy's horse and tore its leg clean off. Quickly grabbing his carbine, he made his way horseless down to the saddle. There, he and Buller rallied the men and pushed them off in the direction of the Kambula Lager, No. 4 Column's base. Darcy was actually dehorsed 4 times during the route from the mountain, but every time managed to find a new horse and keep going. One of the men who saved his life that day was none other than his commanding officer, Buller himself. George Mossop, whose book we read a moment ago, recalled that Major Buller rode up and told Darcy to climb up behind him. Darcy knelt before Buller and begged him to leave him. Buller gruffly told him not to be a fool. As the Zulus reached Darcy, he realized that dying was in nobody's best interest, and he leaped up behind the Major and was carried to the safety of the lower plateau. Buller was awarded the Victoria Cross for his actions. The FLH had 3 officers and 26 men killed in that day's fighting. When they reached the lager, it was discovered that amongst the dead was none other than Captain Barton. Cecil was therefore appointed as the 4th and final commander of the FLH. The next day, the unit took part in another battle, the Battle of Kambula, the battle that marked a clear turning point in the Anglo-Zulu War. 20,000 Zulus and Abakalusi warriors were beaten back with horrific casualties. As the Zulus retreated, the FLH were unleashed by Wood and showed little mercy. Captain Hutton, a Maori war veteran, said they used captured assegais like swords to kill as many of the enemy as possible. Let's fast forward a couple months now to the second invasion of Zululand. And it was on the 3rd of July 1879 that the mounted troops under Buller conducted a reconnaissance in force towards Ondini, the Zulu capital, aka Ulundi. But as they went forward, they didn't know they were walking into a trap. The Zulus were clever. They had tempted them by putting some goat herds out where they could see them, and then the warriors laid in wait. Buller noted the deliberate slowness of these herdsmen he was following and, being the exceptional soldier that he was, suspected a trap. He ordered his men to fire a volley from the saddle. Suddenly, thousands of Zulus emerged from cover and the British mounted troops began a fighting withdrawal, outnumbered and under immense pressure. As they had at Habane, a number of men became dehorsed in the chaos. Cecil spotted a comrade on foot and stopped to help him, exactly as others had done for him at Habane. Ian Ace, in his excellent book on South Africans who have won the Victoria Cross, wrote, "Cecil Darcy, who had ridden to the rescue of Trooper Raubenheim, was in agony. The latter was a dead weight and could not stand. Darcy dismounted, lifted the trooper onto his horse and then remounted. The animal, startled by the shouting Zulus, bucked them off. Darcy hung grimly onto the reins while he calmed his horse, then again attempted to lift Raubenheim. The strain was too much and agonizing pains shot through Darcy's back. Forced to drop the trooper, Darcy barely had time to claw his way into the saddle before the Zulus were on him. Assegais stabbed at him, but his horse broke away from the clutching hands and carried him to safety. During the night, Raubenheim was tortured and mutilated before being disemboweled and killed. Not pleasant. The citation for Darcy's VC reads, Captain Darcy, though the Zulus were close upon them, waited for the man to mount behind him. The horse kicked them both off, and though much hurt by the fall and quite alone, Captain Darcy coolly endeavoured to lift the trooper who was stunned onto the horse. And it was only when he found that he had no strength to do so that he mounted and rode off. His escape was miraculous, as the Zulus had actually closed in upon him. Now, with the rank of commandant, Cecil was also mentioned in Buller's final dispatches that read, "Commandant Darcy, Frontier Light Horse, reckons neither personal inconvenience nor danger in the execution of any order. Determined and bold, he's frequently shown great personal gallantry and has always given a fine example to his men." Captain Lord Beresford of the 9th Lancers, as well as Sergeant Edmund O'Toole of the FLH, were both also to receive the VC for similar actions that day. As an aside, Lord Beresford's descendant, Marcus Delaporte Beresford, is a friend of the show and has been a guest here on Redcoat History a number of times. Coincidence, eh? Isn't that amazing? On the 27th of October 1879, Darcy was invited for dinner with the great Lord Wolseley, the new GOC in South Africa. Wolseley, who to be fair seems like a bit of a dick when you read about him, didn't have much nice to say about Darcy, and he wrote in his diary, "He's certainly about as great a swaggerer as it has ever been my luck to encounter. All through dinner he could only talk of himself and his gallant exploits." But despite not liking him, it was Wolseley himself who presented Darcy with his Victoria Cross. It was at a parade in Pretoria on the 10th of December. But later that day, he again put pen to paper and wrote, "I gave away the Victoria Cross to Captain Darcy today on parade. I do not think this was a good case for this distinction, as he did not succeed in saving the life of the man he dismounted to save." Harsh. Regardless of Wolseley's comments, he, along with another FLH man, Sergeant O'Toole, had become famous due to their VC exploits. Their photographs could even be brought across Natal. I guess they were the Victorian version of today's social media celebrities.
"No pictures. No pictures, please."
Anyway, things were about to take a bad turn. The Frontier Light Horse, despite its excellent exploits in the Zulu War, were about to be broken up and disbanded. In January 1880, the men were discharged with no formal thanks. A sad end for such an elite unit. Cecil, disappointed by his treatment, then applied for a position as a colonel in one of the three new Cape Mounted Yeomanry regiments. But to rub salt into his wounds, there was no vacancies for him. But he wasn't out of work for long, though. He was then asked by the creator and first commanding officer of the FLH, Colonel Carrington, to take up a captain's appointment with the Cape Mounted Rifles. Cecil jumped at the chance and in July 1880 took command of No. 2 Troop. And it was just in time, because in September another war was beginning. This one was against the mighty Basutu in the area now known as Lesotho. The Sotho were expert horsemen and as brave as they come. Darcy's No. 2 Troop were of course in the thick of the fighting. There was rarely a quiet day and they were often in the local papers for their exploits. One example is the Battle of Mahalishook in south of Basutu land. It's been called a mini Rorke's Drift. 8 Europeans and 100 native police under siege by 2,000 Basutu warriors. The garrison even had a reverend handing out ammunition, just like Chaplain Smith had done at Rorke's Drift. Darcy and his unit were part of the relief force that was mustered to go and help them. They crossed the Basutu land border. Darcy was cantering at the lead with the vanguard. They fought their way through the massed Basutu and lost several men in the process. It was a tough battle. Once in, they had to get out again. But somehow, against the odds, they did succeed. 13 days later was another brutal battle, this time at a place called Kalabani. The yeomanry suffered heavy casualties at the hands of those brutal Basutu battle axes. It was truly a ghastly sight. 32 were killed and 10 wounded. This was a war as hard as anything the whites had faced in Africa. Darcy was everywhere in the war and next fought with his troop at Leratodi's village on the 22nd of October and at Kola on the 13th of November 1880. Then, on the 14th of January 1881, near the Tweefontein trading station, the CMR, alongside the Burghers and a native contingent, faced thousands of mounted Basutus. Things looked dire. The Basutus swung their axes and came charging forward. It seemed inevitable that the Cape forces would be wiped out. But Darcy and Captain Charles Shervington, another well-known Zulu war veteran, could see what was about to happen and quickly took control. They galloped forward, dismounted with 40 men, and at 150 yards range, opened fire on the charging Basutu. So hot and devastating was their fire that the Basutu charge was forced to split into two groups and it lost its momentum. The action went on for 5 hours, and the Basutu fought brilliantly. There were many casualties. However, Darcy, Shervington and the 40 men of the CMR did save the day. It was a truly magnificent and brave stand in the face of a terrifying light cavalry charge. Surgeon McCrae of Brabant's 1st Yeomanry was to be awarded the Victoria Cross for his work that day. But things were not as rosy as they seemed. It was on the 28th of January 1881 that Darcy put pen to paper and resigned his commission. On the face of it, his issue seemed as old as time itself in that he wasn't earning enough money. Now that's a predicament I can sympathise with. Darcy wrote, "I have already lost one horse and everything I possessed at the station I have just left. I regret extremely being obliged to leave such a corps as the CMR, having always found them as good a men as I have ever fought with. I trust I may be allowed to leave the force as soon as I have settled number 2 troop accounts. At the same time, I would wish it understood that I do not desire to leave the field at the present crisis." Colonel Carrington supported him and wrote to Brigadier General Clark, also a Zulu War veteran, that it would be most beneficial to the interests of the service that this officer be allowed to resign his commission. He doesn't elaborate why it would be in the best interest of the CMR to allow Darcy to leave, and there certainly seems no indication that he was a bad operator or that things weren't going well for him. To be honest, it's all very strange and fishy. There were rumours that Darcy was jealous of Shervington, the other officer, but Cecil publicly refuted this. He finally left the CMR on the 15th of April 1881, just before hostilities officially ceased. 4 months later, on the 6th of August 1881, while residing at a friend's house at Kaiskamma Hook, Cecil Darcy VC disappeared. Nobody knew what had happened, it was a mystery. But then, 5 months later, a body was discovered. And due to a tam o' shanter and a slipper that was found with the body, it was identified as that of Darcy. It was thought that in the bad weather he'd become lost and died due to exposure, which seems unlikely given his experience of life in the field. Either way, it was a sad end for such a warrior. However, perhaps it's not the whole story. Lionel Cohen, a South African trader, later wrote, "Poor Darcy, a hard liver whom I knew intimately, was always supposed to have done away with himself. At all events, he was found dead on the felt." This does seem an interesting comment from someone that knew him in Basutu land. It seems possible that Darcy, like so many men who have been awarded the Victoria Cross, struggled to come to terms with life afterwards. He couldn't find the peace he was looking for. It's likely he had depression, or what today we might call PTSD. There was later a suggestion that he'd faked his own death and was in fact residing in Natal under an assumed name. However, there's no real evidence to support this sort of Lord Luking style theory. Let's not forget that Darcy was very well known, and the white population of Natal was very small. It would be the equivalent of David Beckham trying to live in London under an alias. We'll never know for sure what was going on inside Darcy's head and what he was thinking, but what we do know is the way he performed and served with bravery in 3 Southern African wars. Captain Cecil Darcy VC commanded arguably the most famous irregular regiment in South Africa, fought valiantly against some of the toughest warriors to ever walk the earth, and earned a Victoria Cross in the process. Whatever personal demons he was dealing with do not take away from the fact he was as tough as they come, and we should raise a drink in his honour.